Okay, so financial data, most of you know this. Okay, what do we observe when we observe financial data? Well, one thing that we observe is volatility clustering. Okay, so we have these periods of high volatility and low volatility. We have heavy tails and negative skewness of the returns distribution, and also we have the leverage effect, which was discussed before and basically says that if you have negative returns, well, they're usually followed by high volatility, and of course you have jumps. Okay, jumps in returns and volatility. Okay, so basically something like that. Okay, and this is the returns on the S&P 500. So the model that I'm going to be introducing and talking about, well, it's to model this kind of behavior. Okay, so GARCH models. Okay, so first, since I'm going to be talking about regime switching GARCH, let's start with just what is a GARCH. So a GARCH, very simple, it has a constant mean and it has a volatility that fluctuates in time. Okay, and the volatility, the way it's described, is with this equation. Okay, so it's just a little bit of a recursive scheme to update volatility. And properties of these of this model, okay, that are known is that, well, this model has heavy tails and it also allows for volatility clustering. Okay, but there may be a little bit a problem in that is that there's no jumps in that model. Okay, or there's no really way to update the volatility or make dramatic changes to the volatility. So one way to do that is to incorporate regime switching into the model. Okay, so what is regime switching? Okay, so it's simply explained with an example. So picture you have two states in the economy, one good state and one state of financial crisis. Well, in the bad state, returns are going to be generated by a low return, high volatility distribution, and in the good state, positive return, low volatility. Okay, so this is a regime switching model, and now what we're concerned about is how do we go from one state to the other. Okay, so one way to do that is to just use a mixture model, which basically consists in flipping some sort of biased coin. Okay, so flip a coin at each time period, and then you're gonna decide on what regime you're in, good or bad. Or you can do that with regime switching, which is usually it supposes that changes in the regimes are driven by a Markov chain. Okay, and why do we want to do that instead of the flipping the coin? Well, when you flip a coin, all of your observations are independent. Okay, so we were not able to recreate this volatility clustering effect. Okay, with regime switching, what we can do is if we use a Markov chain to explain transitions, okay, in the states, well, we can say if we're in the good state, we have 95% of staying in that good state. And if we're in the bad state, we have 80% chance of staying in that bad state. So this creates, if one state is high volatility, the other state is low volatility, this will create this volatility clustering effect. Okay, so that's why I guess people like regime switching models in finance. Okay. So then if we want to estimate the regime switching model, it's not too hard. Okay, you can calculate the likelihood, maximize it. You can do it through the EM algorithm, okay, which is I'll be talking about after. And what's nice about the EM algorithm for a regime switching normal with two normal distributions is that everything is done analytically. Okay, there's no need for some optimization routine or whatever. Okay, and then you have Bayesian methods, of course, that can be used. Okay, so there's different methods to estimate regime switching models. And then since I really call the model that I'm going to be talking about Markov switching GARCH model, okay, so I put a little bit that sometimes regime switching, there's alternative terms in the literature that maybe don't mean exactly the same thing, but refer to the same types of models that I just presented with that illustration, which is hidden Markov model, for example. But or Markov switching model to really emphasize that the regime switching is driven by a Markov chain. Okay, so the Markov switching GARCH or the regime switching GARCH, if you want, what is it? Okay, so it's described by these three equations. Okay, but if you forget about these three equations and you just think about it, okay, a GARCH model, I know what is a GARCH model. Okay, so a regime switching GARCH model is simply a GARCH model that allows the parameters to switch regimes. Okay, so we're going to transition from one regime to the other, and what's going to happen is that the parameters of the GARCH model will change. Okay, so this is basically what is the regime switching GARCH model, and the I put this term in yellow here. Why? Well, it's because the problem here when you want to estimate that model is, say you want to calculate the volatility at time t. Okay, to know the volatility at time t, you need the current state, okay, the state of the economy today, okay, and you need the previous volatility. But to calculate the previous volatility, you need the previous state and the volatility before that. So what happens? Path dependence. Okay, to know the volatility today, we would have to know all the sequences of past states. Okay, so this is what is referred to. This makes this model path dependent. So if you want to calculate the likelihood, well, we should know at each time point what are the possible volatilities that we can have. But if you want to know that, we need to know the entire regime path up until then. Okay. So if you start with a certain volatility, you have two possibilities, and then from each branch you have two more possibilities, and it continues on. Okay, here you have two, here you have four, after you have 8, 16, 32, 64, etc. So it becomes very, very quickly high, and computationally you can't take care of all of that. There's too many possibilities, and that creates the problem that you won't be able to write the likelihood function analytically. Okay, so these regime switching Garch models are becoming more popular now in to model financial data. Okay, so I think working on estimation because of that is interesting, and no one has yet to propose a method to obtain the maximum likelihood estimator of that model. Okay, for the reason that we can calculate the likelihood analytically. Okay, so first I'll show you some methods that were used up to now to estimate this model. Okay, so the first one to present a regime switching Garch model is Gray in 1996. Okay, so he noted that problem of the path dependence, and how did he estimate the regime switching Garch model? Well, he said, let's modify it a little bit. Okay, so you start with a volatility. Depending on the state you are in, you have two possibilities. And then instead of continuing like that, he says, let's stop, let's collapse these two volatilities into one number, okay, so aggregate, some sort of aggregation based on this quantity, okay, which does not depend on the regime path, which only depends on the observations, okay. So you can see this term a little bit, not exactly, but as a weighted average of these two quantities, okay, weighted by the probability of being in each regime, okay. So that's what he did, and that removes path dependence, because at each time point, this volatility that's going to update the next one, well, depends on the observation and not on the regime path. Okay, but it's so that's one way to estimate the model, but it's you simplify the model to estimate it. Okay, you're not really estimating the original model. Okay, so then in 2008, it's Frank and Zakoyan who were the first to really propose a method to estimate that regime switching Garch model without any modification. Okay, because before them, a lot of people took the method of Gray and maybe refined it a little bit, but Frank and Zakoyan said, okay, well, we're gonna take the model as is, and we're gonna propose a method which is the generalized method of moments. And why is that method working here? Well, you don't have to calculate the likelihood to use that method, so you don't have the path dependence problem. And what is the generalized method of moments? Well, simply said, take the method of moments. Everyone knows what it is. Method of moments, you have a certain number of moment conditions and parameters. The two are equal, okay? Generalized method of moments, you have more moment conditions than parameters. Of course, you can't satisfy all the moment conditions exactly, but you want to satisfy them as well as you can based on some least squares criterion. Okay, so that's the idea of the GMM. And why they were able to estimate it through the generalized method of moments is because a few years before they derived expressions for these values for the regime switching Garch model, which is basically why here is in my presentation seen as the observation. Okay, so you can see it as the return. Okay, so you need this. So, but if you look at the results, they have one problem, which is identifiability. So if they don't use enough moment conditions, what will happen is that they will have two Garch the regime switching Garch processes with different parameters that will have the same moment structure. That's a problem. Okay. Then the other thing is robustness. So they say, okay, well, if you want identifiability, take more moment conditions. So take m equals 2. But if you take m equals 2, you could have something here to the power of 8 and shouldn't be very robust. Okay, and then if you look at the results, there's still some bias in the estimators. Okay, so that's generalized method of moments. So that was one method proposed to estimate the regional restriction garnish model. Another method that was proposed in 2010 was Bayesian Markov chain Monte Carlo. So of course, why does it work, Bayesian methods, to estimate path-dependent models with hidden states? Well, it's simply what we call the data augmentation technique, okay, which basically says, okay, we don't know the states, but let's simulate them. Okay, in the Bayesian setting, we simulate the parameters. Well, let's treat the states as parameters and simulate them. And then once we know the states, okay, then it's easy to calculate the likelihood of the states and the observations, and then we can generate parameters. Okay, so that's just the general idea. Okay, so you can do it by Bayesian methods. Okay, so we have GMM, we have Bayesian to estimate the model, but there's not yet a method to find the maximum likelihood estimate. Okay, and usually all of these methods were introduced because the author said, well, we can't find maximum likelihood estimator, so here's what I propose. Okay, it's true that we can't calculate the likelihood analytically, but doesn't mean that we can't find the maximum likelihood estimator, because the EM algorithm, and that's the main insight of the EM algorithm, is that you don't need to calculate the likelihood to find the maximum likelihood estimator. So I'll talk a little bit about the EM algorithm. Okay, so here L theta is the log likelihood, and the main insight of the EM algorithm is we split the log likelihood in this Q function and this H function. Okay, and this is very easy to do. It's just you apply Bayes theorem. Okay, you split it in two. Okay, and then here, why does it simplify our problem? Is because here in the log, we're working with the density of the observation Y and the states S. Okay, the states S are in blue and capitalized. Okay, so we're working with this density, which is much easier to work with, because if you can easily write the density of Y and S, but you can't easily write the density of just Y. Okay, well, you can, but you can't compute it numerically. Okay, so that's why the EM algorithm will make our things easier. Okay, so and here, so the main insight is you split the log likelihood in these two functions. This is just Bayes theorem. And then after, think about an algorithm to find the maximum likelihood estimator. So start with a value of theta prime. Say you have theta prime, and then you want to find a better value. So what does that mean? You want to make this difference positive. Okay, you want to find a value of theta that's going to increase. Okay, this that's going to make this positive. Okay, so if we rewrite the difference in log likelihoods instead of Q and H functions, okay, then you have something like that. But the thing is that this whole term with the minus sign is positive. Okay, and this is just by Jensen's inequality. Okay, so if this is positive, we just have to make sure that this is also positive. Okay, so the EM algorithm, that's what it permits. It permits us to, instead of maximizing the likelihood, working with these Q functions. Okay, and the Q function is easier to calculate in our case than it is with the likelihood. Okay, so that's why it's called the EM algorithm. There's two states. There's two stages. One state is called the expectation stage. That's where you calculate this Q function. And the next stage is maximization of the Q function to make sure that this is positive, so that the next value that you have is better than the previous one. Okay, so that's what I put here, E step and M step. So in our case, okay, for that Q function, which is just this, we can't calculate this analytically either. Okay, so we have a problem like that, but we can easily do it by simulation. Okay, what we need here, we can approximate this integral with this sum. Okay, all we need is samples from this distribution here. We need to sample the states conditional on having observed the observation and on the parameter that at the previous iteration. Okay, and when you approximate this integral like that, instead of the EM algorithm, it becomes the Monte Carlo EM algorithm, and that was introduced in the 90s by Wei and Tanner. Okay, so that's what we have to do. So now, if we look at the E step, the problem that we have is we have to calculate, we have to sample basically state vectors. Okay, so how can we do that? Well, this is pretty straightforward. We can use the Gibbs sampler, okay, to do that. I'm not gonna maybe go in detail, just want to say that we can do that with the Gibbs sampler. And what is the Gibbs sampler? Well, it's a highly sequential algorithm where we simulate states one by one. So let's say we have just simulated this state. We're gonna simulate this state conditional on knowing all the other states. And then we do this iteratively over and over again. And eventually, we will be getting samples from this density. Okay, so a little bit like a Bayesian problem of finding the posterior distribution of the parameters. Okay, because this is like the posterior distribution of the states. Okay, so so that's for the E step. Okay, so that we needed these samples for the E step. The M step, on the other hand, is just a maximization. It's not very complicated. Once we can calculate the Q function, we can maximize it. And what's neat too, and this is something that happens in regime switching models when you use the EM algorithm, and when transition probabilities don't depend on other parameters, is that you can split the maximization step in two, and you can maximize the transition probabilities independently of the other parameters, and you have closed form expressions for these transition probabilities. And then the Garch parameters, to get the Garch parameters, you have to do it, of course, numerically. But you can calculate the gradient of the log likelihood function, give it to your optimization routine, and it's going to help a lot. Okay, so it's not really a problem. Okay, so now the only problem that now in theory we can do it. Okay, we have the E step, the M step. We know how to calculate the Q function. We can maximize it, iteration. Okay, so what's the problem now is more of how many samples do we need? Let's be efficient with the computational time. Well, one thing that we can do, because generating sample takes a lot of time. Okay, it's the Gibbs sampler, sequential, it takes a long time. So what we can do is that we can use important sampling. Okay, what is important sampling? Well, the general idea is that say you have just generated a sample, okay, from the state vector, okay, conditional, let's say, on this data star. Okay, say you have just generated such a sample, and now instead of on the next step to generate a new sample, okay, let's reuse that same sample. Okay, but we're not going to reuse it. We're going to reuse that same sample exactly as is, but when we're going to calculate the Q function, we're going to use some weight, okay, to reweight it. Why? Well, because now we want to calculate this Q function conditional on having generated states based on this parameter, okay, not theta star, this one, okay? So the weights, if you want intuitively, it will just, what are the weights? Well, they represent the relative likelihood of having seen that sample based on this parameter or based on this parameter. Okay, so if it's more likely to be under this parameter, the weights are going to be higher, and it's going to put more weight in the Q function. Okay, so that's just the general idea, okay? So I would say maybe a minor problem with this is that important sampling, you want to reuse the same sample, but through the algorithm, you would like also to increase the sample size, because when you start increasing the sample size of the state vector, you get more precision, and as you move through the algorithm, that's what you need, okay? So you'd like to increase the sample size, and then the parameters change as well, and then they hopefully get closer to the MLE. So in a certain sense, if the parameters get closer to the MLE and you start important sampling too early, okay, what can happen is that your important sample is not that good. It's too far from the real one. Okay, so you have that problem as well. Okay, and then the second thing that we can use to help us with the estimation is to use stochastic approximation EM. Okay, so there's one thing is that the Monte Carlo EM algorithm, it doesn't converge with a fixed sample size. Okay, you always got to keep on increasing the sample size. Okay, so at one point, we would like to maybe stop increasing the sample size and start reusing the same sample that we have generated at the later stages, okay, of the algorithm. Okay, so that's what we can do is with stochastic approximation EM. It's a little variant of the Monte Carlo EM algorithm, if you want. Okay, that's going to converge with a fixed sample size. Okay, and what's the difference between stochastic approximation EM and Monte Carlo EM algorithm is that the Monte Carlo algorithm is just going to care about this term here. Okay, this is your Q in the Monte Carlo EM algorithm. You calculate this and you maximize it. Okay. So the stochastic approximation EM is going to take a weighted average, okay, of this value that you would have used in the Monte Carlo and the previous Q. Okay, so it's like a little bit like a little weighted average embedded scheme in it. Okay, so that's what the stochastic approximation does. And one of the good things that, or one of the drawback of this approach is that if you at every time point, okay, at every step, you have a new sample, okay, you have a problem because to calculate this Q function, you need to keep track of all of the previous samples that you generated, okay? And it's a big, at one point it becomes too heavy, okay, on the machine to keep track of all of these samples, and then you have to calculate your functions for all of these samples too much, okay? So, easy solution to this problem is to use important sampling and stochastic approximation EM. Why? Important sampling, you need one sample that you reuse, okay? So if you use important sampling and stochastic approximation EM, the two together, I think it's great to finish a Monte Carlo EM algorithm, okay? It goes, you don't have to generate any new samples to calculate the weights very fast, and when you combine stochastic approximation EM with important sampling, okay? So if you combine the two together, you're essentially doing the same kinds of calculation as if you were only using important sampling. Why? It's because the Q function in the stochastic approximation EM, you can write it like that with weights, and this looks exactly like the important sampling, but the difference with important sampling is that the weights that you use are a little bit of a weighted average of the important sampling weights and the past important sampling weights. Okay, so that's just that's a little bit more technical, okay, but all in all, I'm going to show you exactly the strategy that I use to the final strategy. Okay, is it the best strategy? No. Is it a good strategy? I think so. Okay, it's not optimal. That's not really the purpose. The purpose is to find a strategy that works well. Okay, so what I propose is do 10 steps of the Monte Carlo EM algorithm. Start small with a small sample size. Increase till 40,000. Okay, so at the end we have a sample of 40,000 state vectors, okay, and that seems like it's enough. Then do 5 steps of important sampling, okay, so you don't need to generate any new samples in this step, and then finally end with 5 steps of the stochastic approximation EM with important sampling, and then, so in these two together you have 20 steps, but it's only in the first 10 steps that you need to generate new samples, okay, and what's nice about it is that at the end, you won't have any Monte Carlo error. It will end converging to some fixed value, okay? Because in the stochastic approximation EM, you have a kind of embedded averaging scheme in it. Okay, so that's just the general idea. So if we look at the results, okay, so that's the last thing that I'm going to show you. So what did I do? Okay, so, and by the way, if I use this, I want to estimate observations of length 1500, it takes around 2 hours. Okay, I guess it's not so bad. Okay, so what I did here is I took these parameters, which are taken from another paper, from the Bayesian paper that I was also estimating. Okay, that's why I can compare my results with their results. And then, so I took a data generating process, a regime switching Garch model. Okay, and what I did is that I considered a length of 500. Okay, so we have 500 observations. Okay, and I simulate these 500 observations, and I do it 200 times. And for each of these times, I estimate the model with the strategy that I propose. Okay, the Monte Carlo EM. I can find the mean of all of these of all of my MLEs. I can find the root mean squared error. So in yellow, what I put is the values that are not so good. Okay, the ones that are not in yellow are let's say acceptable. Okay, and I also have asymptotic standard deviations, which are very close to my root mean squared errors, which show that at least makes sense. Okay, everything makes sense, it's coherent. Okay, so, but here we have bias. Okay, we have bias that's quite important, but then again, it's also the two parameters that have the most uncertainty if you look at asymptotic standard deviations or my root mean squared error. So that's for a sample size of 500. Now if you put at 1500, it's a little better. Okay, it goes down, and all of these root mean squared errors too go down. Okay, and then if you take 5000, well, it goes down again. Okay, now it's actually not so bad, and also all of the root mean squared errors go down. And if I compare these results to the other methods that were proposed to estimate, well, these results, okay, you may say, okay, well, there's still some bias. Well, the bias is still lower than the other methods, and the standard errors are also lower. Okay, so it shows that, I mean, it should be a reasonable method to estimate that model. Okay, so thank you very much. Yeah, well, we found the MLE. We never were able to calculate the likelihood. Okay, I never calculated the likelihood. Now, the easy way would be maybe, okay, let's simulate the likelihood by simulation and then estimate the parameters with a simulated likelihood method. Okay, this could work. Okay, I think you can do it like that. The only problem is that what's going to happen is that when you're going to do the simulated likelihood method and you're going to want to find the log likelihood, you're going to have log of a sum, okay? Because to find the likelihood, you need to sum over all the state vectors, and that numerically you won't be able to do that, okay? So there's another way to split the likelihood, okay, which could work, but then you need maybe to use some sort of particle filter, okay? So I think you can do it with simulated likelihood, but I don't think it's going to be as easy, I think, as here. Okay, but it's definitely something that I think could be done.
Another question? So, again, thank you.